This is an interview with Virginia Schocher. The date is August 22nd, 1993. My father's family.
You got to talk in the mic.
No, she's fine. My father's family came out. And I don't know whether it was my grandparents. I think they came in 1898. And then my father came the next year. He rode out here horseback from Oklahoma. My grandfather was George Ford. And I don't know what he did for, but my father homesteaded what was called the Turkey Ranch up on Devil Creek.
This is over in Pagosa Springs country?
Uh-huh. Okay. You know where Devil Creek is coming out this way?
I've heard the name.
It's about 18 miles.
Okay.
Out of Pagosa Springs. There's a little restaurant there close to it. But this ranch that my father homesteaded was up the creek about a mile. And he homesteaded that. And there's a part, I don't know what happened. But anyway, later my grandparents, George Ford, lived on that ranch. And my two grandparents, I mean my two grandfathers, were boyhood friends back in Missouri. So my grandfather Ford wrote to my grandfather Walker and said, do you happen to have a daughter that would like to come west to teach school? And my mother was a fairly venturous person. So in 1902, in August, I don't know the date, I think it was the 18th, but I'm not sure, she got in Dyke. And when she came out, she thought she had to take teacher's examination, but they had given her the wrong date. But she had taught a year in Oklahoma. So
how old was she?
When she came out, she was 23. Susie Walker.
Susie Walker was her name? Okay.
And there was no schoolhouse built. And besides that, they had already had the teacher's examination. But because she had taught in Oklahoma, some way they managed, so she was able to go ahead and teach. Well, they didn't get the schoolhouse built until November. But she had worked for her aunt in a dressmaking shop. So she did sewing, dressmaking, until they got the schoolhouse built.
Now, were they going to build the schoolhouse out there on Devil Creek, or were they at Dyke? Okay.
And I don't know how many pupils she had, but she taught for $35 a month. And
that's pretty good wages by then, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, she said.
For a lady, particularly.
And she had kids from beginners through 18 or 19 years old. That was when they were cutting all the timber. You know, you can, as you come by Sunitha out, there's a lot of old stumps there. Well, Sullenberger had his sawmill there at that time. And a lot of those fellows were sawmill fellows and their families. And so she taught at Dyke that winter. And then they decided they wanted a school on the Yellow Jacket. You know where the Yellow Jacket Divide is?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get down to the foot of the divide, there's the Yellow Jacket and the I'm not going to tell you what the other one is. They come together.
Is it Fawcett?
What? No, not Fawcett. No. It goes the other way. This is the one that goes, instead of making the band as you come on, toward up the hill, goes straight on up the canyon.
Okay.
And they went to school. So they didn't have schoolhouse. My mother lived in a tent and taught in the woodshed in 1903 in the summer.
Did she have any school supplies at all? Were they able to supply her with anything?
I doubt if she had very much. They were probably able to get a few books, probably through the superintendent of schools. And then, let's see.
Oh, did they have a school in Pagosa Springs, though, at the town itself, though?
Yes, that was, oh yes.
So that was where the superintendent was from, that was taking care of these smaller little community County schools then? Okay.
So, I think she went back to Dyke the next year. But because of her coming out here with my grandfather, of course she met my father. And they were married in 1905. She taught out of trouble 1 year. And then my folks were married, and they lived out on the Piedra. In fact, they moved two or three times when they were first married. I had two brothers, and they lived up on Devil Creek on the old ranch 1 year. And they lived down in the sawmill on the Piedra. And then they bought the ranch where I was born in 1910. And that's, as you go, well, it's just really in second place. Coming up.
Okay.
Well, we were talking about my mother. Mm-hmm. And then after she got married, we lived out there on the yellow jackets. And I went to the little country school out there to the sixth grade. And my father passed away. He was Ralph Ford. And he passed away. And apparently, the doctors, it was the year of the flu real bad. He came in here to Dr. Oxner. And Dr. Oxner sent him back. He'd been sick. He says, you get out of here because the flu's too bad. Well, my father was always the separator man on the threshing machines. Of course, at that time, they didn't have the combines. And he took sick right after that. Now, this is my opinion. I think that he got so much chaff and dirt in his lungs because when he died, I've always been mad at the editor. He did smoke a pipe, I admit that. But it came out in Pagosa paper. Smoker's consumption changed Ralph Ford. Well, I think it was, I'm very sure there was this threshing and all, because he was the separator man for the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he just said. And so he died, and my mother was going to go to Greeley to school, and I had an aunt in Shawano. My oldest brother had taken sick, and my aunt in Reno took my oldest brother out there and kept him until he was a senior in high school in Reno. And my mother took the other two of us over to Shawano. And she was going to go to Greeley and renew her teacher's certificate and all. And I stopped that. I got whooping cough, and I got scarlet fever over there. So she never did go. And she went out to Edith, little town Edith, community of Edith.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, I don't know how she got her certificate. But she was able to go out there and finish the school year for Mrs. Snooks. It used to. Did you know the Snookses from Mayfield?
Uh huh.
Well, Otis Snooks was her husband. And Gladys Snooks. And so Mother went down there and finished because she was pregnant with Otis, the first son. And she taught down there for two different winters. And one summer up in what's called Coyote Park. So I went school year round. And I got out of school, ready for high school, a year younger than I should have been. And then I went to Pagosa. And that was the year the schoolhouse burned in Pagosa.
The one that sat up on top of the hill there? Oh.
So we went to school. I went to school at the Old Methodist Church. All three of my two brothers, my brother came home. And then we went to...
What year did that burn down?
1920. I can't remember. I think it was in the January of 1924. Because my brother graduated that year. And we'd all had the measles. And my brother could hardly stand it because the high school boys were up there working with the hose. And Mother wouldn't let it go because he had just gotten over the measles. And she didn't feel she dared let it go. And so then we went to school the rest of that year and all the next year in the Methodist Church. And the year I was a junior, we got into the high school, but we didn't have too many facilities. And several of the teachers didn't get along with the superintendent. So my mother moved to Ignacio to teach.
Was she teaching there in Pagosa at this time as well?
She was teaching third grade. She went to Ignacio and taught fifth and sixth grade. And we only had two teachers in high school at all 4 years. So it was a case of taking what they could give you. But I graduated there from Mediation. And I was no more ready to graduate from high school than anything as I look back. Because I'd had that sort of a thing. And then I went to Fort Lewis the first year they had college out there. There were 21 of us.
Huh. When they changed it from a boarding school to a college, is that when that change happened?
No, it was a boarding school. And they had a lot more high school pupils than the college because it was just the 1 year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more or less like going to high school. And I suffered from that. I think we had excellent teachers.
What year was that?
1927.
Okay.
And I didn't know how to use a library card. Well, the next year I went up to Greeley. Well, I had missed all freshman orientation, of course. And I got up there and I was a year younger than I should have been anyway. And I was, I guess, embarrassed a bit. I didn't know all these things. So I tagged along with friends to learn how to use a card catalog and all this sort of thing. And I finished my first 2 years. At that time, they issued a temporary certificate, 2 year certificate. So I started teaching on my 2 year certificate.
And how old were you?
I was 19.
Wow.
So I taught up in the northern part of the state for 2 years. And I got homesick. I just was not mature. I came home and I taught out at the Blanco. And that was the year they had terrific snow out there. The first part of the fall, I taught on the highway out of the Blanco. Lived in Chester and Neva Hazelwood. And Thanksgiving came. And this has always been funny. My brother had said, you can just stay out there because I'm going to go to Pueblo with a bunch of the boys and get some cars. Because Jimmy Kenny had a garage. And, you know, the good old country lines. Bill Kingsley heard, and he called. He says, Virginia, I'll come get you if you want to come. Yeah, fine. So he came and got me to be a channel. And he starts, it was snowing when he came out. It snowed all weekend. He says, I'll be back and take you back out on Sunday. And he says, I'll take your horse back if I have to. Sunday morning, he called me and he said, I can't get in. The snow is so deep. I got out there to the Brown place. Lynn George, anyway. And he says, I can't get in. So I called the school board and said, I can't get back out of school. I said, just be grateful you can. Kids couldn't get school anyway. So I stayed home, and then Thanksgiving weekend after that. And then Bill came and got me horseback and took me out to school. And I had been out there about 2 weeks, and it snowed some more. We had quite a lot of parking on the ground out there. And of course, at that time, none of those roads were paved. They didn't have snow plows to keep the roads open. And the Amixes called, and they lived all up the Blanco River. I was living in Chester, near Hazelwood. And they asked Chester if he could come meet them, but their baby was very sick. And would he come up and break trail for them? Well, Neva wasn't feeling well, and she didn't feel... She says, Chester, you can't go alone. Because this was about 10:30, 8 o'clock when they called. I said, oh, I'll go. So he went out and harnessed a 4-horse team, saddled 2 horses. And we rode the saddle horses. And he broke trail to go up to meet his family. The horse I was on had not been used very much that fall. And by the time we got up and across the Blanco, she was just panting something terrible. Chester said, I can't take you any further. She'll just quit. So he says, I'll build a fire for you and leave you here, because he'd been getting wood up there. And he started on, didn't get any distance at all, and we heard them coming. We heard the sleigh bells with the child. So we turned around and came back again in the lead, so as to really have the... Because, see, he didn't take a sled. He just broke trail with the horses.
Now, is Mary Fisher the doctor at this time that you'd have to get down to?
Yes.
Okay.
No, it was Dr. I can't remember when she died. It was Dr. Biskowick, anyway, that came out. I think Dr. Fisher was dead. And he came out to what was the selected place and met that family. And the child was having kidney problems, and the child lived. And I stayed there until Christmas. And then they moved me down on the Lord Blanco.
Good boy.
And that was all Spanish kids. But they were nice families. Some of the Bilardis were down there, and they was just... They were nice kids. I lived with Felipe Martinez. He had 5 children. She had braided all of the rugs in the house. They had a kitchen, a large room that they used for everything, and that was their bedroom. They had a room off of that that they gave me, and they had a little stove in that room. And they gave me that room. And then there was another room beyond, that I guess you'd have called it the parlor, but they frankly never used it. And that man would come in every morning and build a fire for me before I got up.
So that was the way that most of the time, did you stay with families when you were a teacher in these small little country schools then?
Then I left there, and it was because of them that I taught 1 year. That's when I had your dad. Judge's tutors. And then I taught 1 year out at Cromwell before, and then I came over here, and I wanted to get in the Durango schools, but at that time, about the only way you could get in the Durango schools was to talk in the rural schools out here. And then if Mr. Smiley saw that you had done a decent job, why, he would hire you. So I went out here it's Middle Cottonwood School, it's a Thompson School. When I went out, somebody says, oh, you're going out to Little Italy. I thought, what do you mean Little Italy? Well, when I got out there, it was practically all Italian families. And the first revelation I had was that they always served wine, water glass. They wouldn't let me have any, because I was the teacher. And then there were two other families, but these Italian families made no bones about it that they had been, this was just post bootlegging, they made no bones about it, they had bootlegged all through, and several of them spent time in jail over it. And that was such a surprise to me. That was when I met my husband. And I taught down there for 2 years, and then I moved up to the Orr School. And I taught there for 4 years.
Where's the Orr School at?
Well, it's a part of the Florida School now. It was on the road of the highway. Well, you know where the light is. And then there's another road that turns off. It's about a mile beyond, and the Orr School was on the right-hand side of the road there. It burned down. I taught there 4 years. And, of course, we had to do all our own, there were two teachers there. We had to do all of our own janitor work and everything. And
where was this Little Italy? Where was the Little Italy?
It was down on the lower part of the Cottonwood Canyon.
Okay.
But that was quite a revelation to me, because they were good to me, but they got scarlet fever in the meantime. It ended up I had moved out of Marty's family to find a place to live, because I couldn't stay where the scarlet fever was. I had had scarlet fever earlier.
How did they doctor that?
They gave me a shot of well, really, it's pretty much just like a bad case of the flu anymore. But I couldn't find a place to live. And I had just barely known Marty at the time. And Mrs. Schroeder said she had a room out there that had no heat in it or whatever. And I got an electric heater, a gasoline heater, to warm my room up at night. And I taught there 2 years. And then I moved up to the Orr School, and that was a two-teacher. And I was there for 4 years. And Mr. Smiley offered me a job. So I came in here and started teaching here in 1941. And I taught here in 1975.
Wow. And you taught at Mason, is that right?
I had a wonderful time.
Loved to teach. That's great.
And I did all the crazy things. Oh, we had two teachers that thought I'd lost my mind. Because One of the things I did, when we had social studies, I'd try to incorporate the early pioneer life. And of course, I'd lived out there on the Piedra where we didn't have any plumbing or anything. And I know I made butter. That was a revelation to the children. They didn't know anything about making butter. And when I said, we're going to wash the butter, they said, you can't wash butter. I said, oh yes, we're going to wash the butter. We churned it. We washed the butter. And they had more fun. And I was always fortunate that a mother would make bread for us. I didn't try to make the bread too at school. And then one year I had some Navajo girls living here, and they came up and made fried bread for the children. And that was a big thrill to them. And then I always read to my children. I felt that reading to them was very important. And evidently it worked, because I have so many children come up yet and say, oh, you remember when you read this, you read Heidi, or when you read Black Beauty, or that sort of thing. And I had, see, it was in 1951, the schoolhouse burned. And that year, we were scattered all over town. That was in March 21st. And I was put in the Presbyterian Church. Some of them were in the Elks Club. Some of them were in the... were sent over to Spine. Some of them were sent to the Methodist Church. Well, they just had to scatter us all over town. And it was a whole year, and I had 43 children. And all I had for a blackboard was a wiggly willies. And most of our books, my room never caught on fire, but my books got wet. So we had books that got pretty well soaked. But that was what we worked with. And then we moved back into Mason School, March 21st. And then it was, I can't remember when they finally decided that 40 kids were too many for the teacher. And we finally got down to between 25 and 30.
Was that a relief to you?
Yes. Although it wasn't too bad, we could have discipline. And I mean, if a youngster was naughty, you could spank. In fact, one of the fun things I've laughed about now that you can't discipline a child, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it when I left the school, when I opened my desk drawer, I found a paddle that was about 4 inches wide, and I'd say, oh, about a foot long. Now, you had holes in it. And I used it some, not a lot, but some. And then later, I got so two of the highlights apparently to the children. I had the Wong girl, and we were studying social studies. And I thought, it'd be nice if they could experience Chinese food. And I asked her if her daddy had let us come down and have Chinese food. He said, sure, that was Woodrow Wong. And the children had to pay for it. Once in a while, I paid for one that couldn't do it. I always asked my room mothers to go with me. And we went down right after school and had Chinese food. And the ruling was they had to eat Chinese food. I said, if you don't want to drink tea, they want pop. No, either you drink tea or water, because this is a Chinese dinner. And he served those kids all that they would eat. I remember the first year I went down, I had one boy that had four big servings chub. And then he always gave the children a pencil and a candy bar when we left. And he always gave me a box of tea, a mandarin tea.
What were the attitudes of people towards teachers during your time? I mean, you know, it just seems that it's changing so much.
We were respected. I had very little trouble with parents. I had one little girl, and yet her folks had been pretty good friends of ours, and she was spoiled. And she got sick, and she decided it was pretty nice to stay home. So she got so she'd talk to her mother. She'd be sick when she got up in the morning. And I talked to the doctor, and he says, she's not sick. She's just bluffing her mother. And her mother was quite upset at me. I told her, I said, I don't think she's sick. I think she just doesn't want to go to school. And she finally got back to school. But I had very wonderful cooperation with my parents.
Sure seems like it's changed a lot these days.
I think it has. I haven't been in the classroom since they can't punish a child.
I think they're getting railroaded in the classroom, don't you, anymore?
A lot. I don't know how a teacher teaches. Yeah. Our niece had finished her, she had her high school credentials, and she decided to go into elementary. She went down to do her student teaching. First thing they told her was, you can't touch a child. You can't put a child in the car. You can't put them out in the hall. And she left in tears. She said, and her children are very well behaved, and I've never seen her be mean to them. But she said, I can't do it. I thought it'd be fun to go back to school and visit someday. Yet I don't know how I feel.
Probably break your heart.
I can hold through and discuss it so I can handle it.
Yeah.
I had an experience. I belonged to AUW. And they wanted some AUW. I don't think I want that on tape.
Okay.
For about 15 years. Another thing I did was take my children to Maysperity. The mothers or fathers would supply cars. So that gave me supervision, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd take the children, and Woodrow Wong, bless his heart, in the end got so he would bake chicken for me down at the restaurant. And then the children would bring me other things. And we had picnic up at Mesa Verde. But we left at 7:30 in the morning. And that gave us time to do most of the ruins. And we didn't get back until 7 o'clock at night. The mothers knew we wouldn't be back. And then I had the children write a history of their trip.
What grade were these kids in?
Fourth grade.
Okay.
And what they had seen and what they had done. And I got some real good reports from them. And the same family that I told you that we had our trailer out there at Mancus, mm-hmm. were always interested in children. And so they said, why don't you bring your kids, your carload of kids down by the house when we come back? So I did. Because I knew the mothers had distributed the kids. And when we came in, I had them write thank you to them because they gave them cookies and I think Coke, I don't remember what all, but anyway, they had a nice time. And Mr. Thomas said to me, you know, I was so pleased. I didn't find one misspelled word or, well, I had critiqued it. And I made them write them so they were right before I let them send the letters. And I thought that was a part of learning. Mm-hmm. They wrote their thank yous. And I saw to it that they were spelled, punctuated right. And I felt that that was a part of learning. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem to be. I have a child that I call my adopted granddaughter. Her father, rather, is my her father's mother is my cousin, and she's like a daughter to us. In fact, she says that we're her adopted parents. And I received a real darling letter from her, or rather a story she had to make up. And she did a pretty good job of it. She was a third grader about living with wolves. It was absolutely, her imagination was terrific. But there were a few mistakes. Now, maybe the teacher went back and critiqued it later, but there were a few mistakes in spelling. And I think that that's where they learned to do perfection. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see what goes on. I think now the kids that are good, they learn in spite of them.
Were you glad when you went into a teaching atmosphere that you only taught one age group? How was it when you taught in the one room where you had so many different ages?
It wasn't too bad because the upper ones would help with the lower ones. They were interested in it. You had to, and then you could put certain things together, for instance, geography. You could put the 7th and 8th grade together. And some of your sciences you put together.
How did you do that if you have a one room? Did you have to just get one group reading or doing something here? It seemed like that they would get so distracted from the others talking.
They learned to concentrate. At least that's the way I felt it. And as I say, sometimes if you had a real good one, they'd get the rest of it. They just love to help the little folks. And that was an asset. Mm-hmm.
Was there quite a few, like my grandmother, and oh gosh, there's been many of them that I've talked to that said that when they went up to 8th grade and that was the end of schooling for them because that was just...
That's right, there was no school.
So they just...
And unless your parents had the money and they didn't feel school was so important then. They didn't get to go out even high school. And...
So all the rural schools were up to 8th grade, and then you had to go into the high school.
That's
and then
right.
You either had to relocate your family so that they could go to school because there was no bus system. Is that right?
That's right. I remember the first year I taught out at the Thompson School. They always took the kids, the 8th graders, to Mesa Verde for graduation. And I guess I was dating my husband, and he took a car for me. But we took our kids up there at their graduation. But they were like a big family as a whole. And the older ones would take care of the little ones up to a point. And you could always find, I don't like to call it busy work, but you could find things for the little ones to do. And then you'd have your own classes.
When was school held? When was school in session?
Generally from 9 o'clock until 4, 5 days a week.
And then throughout the whole, just the summer? Because when it was hard
to get... had 3 months, so.
So, and then the wintertime, just because the weather was so rough, you couldn't get...
They still came. And they would, a lot of them had to walk. Sometimes they'd ride horseback. When I was in school, out there on the Yellow Jacket, we were a mile and a quarter from school. And we had to walk until the snow was real bad. My father always had good horses. He'd let us ride horseback then. the weather was real bad. We'd take our horses and tie them up there. I think we tried to take some oats or something for them. But we rode horseback to school.
Did they have a big corral for everybody's horses to sit out, or did you just tie them up to the rail and went on?
Trees.
Huh.
Now, when I taught out at Pop Thompson, after I moved down to the Shoshers, see, that was the first year I taught out there, they were a little over a mile from school, and Barney had a real pretty mare, and he let me ride her to school. And I used to take her saddle off, and I could turn her loose and play girl if I wanted to, because there was a fence. And then I'd go out and saddle her at night, ride on the hook. Of course, I grew up on a horse. I mean, my family were cattle people, and we always had horses.
So what other kind of hobbies did you enjoy doing outside of your professional teaching?
Oh, well, as a child, I didn't have many hobbies. I followed my brothers around. I never wanted to sew and do those things that you expect little girls to do. I didn't do it. I went out with my brothers, and I got in trouble with them every so often. They'd go out and drive prairie dogs. They didn't want me. I was the younger one. And we had a dog. Mother never worried about us. He had rattlesnakes out there. But that dog was always go with the children. And if there was a rattlesnake around, he could grab that snake and pop its head off. And he always took care of us.
Gosh. What kind of dog was it?
Duke's mixture. He was a shepherd and collie.
Oh, all right.
And he always went with us wherever we went. In fact, I remember we used to have the neighbors in, or we'd go to the league, and we would play run, sheep, run, and hide and go seek, and, you know, all those things. I wonder if kids know anything. And my oldest brother was his dog's favorite. And he'd go to hide, and regardless of where he went, this dog would stand right there where he was and just wag his tail to me. He couldn't hide from
me. Oh, gosh.
But I learned to dance when I was 10 years old, no, 11. When my mother went out to teach at Edith, she had all, they were all Spanish. And I think this is an interesting thing. First year, we heard a bell tolling. It was Catholic Church down about a half mile from the schoolhouse. Mother says there's been a death. She heard this bell tolling. Well, I had a little friend named Juanita Lujan that we played together a lot. And she came up and she said, my uncle died. My aunt, she said, you come down and see her. So Mother said, okay, we'll go down. So we walked down. And this was just a little over a year after my father's death. He got down there. And when we got close to the house, I heard this wailing, and I mean wailing, just really. And we went in. We were quite a few people there. We were greeted by the widow, and out in the yard, the men were making the casket. They were making it, boarding it up, making the casket. And I don't remember what they put inside, but I know they put black cloth on the outside of it. It didn't have a commercial casket. And we went inside, and they had coffee. And I don't remember what. Anyway, something. Well, a little bit, this wailing stopped then, quit all his crying. And then after a little while, somebody else came and started all over again. Every time anybody came in, she went through this loud wailing. And then a little bit.
Where was the body?
It was, at that time, it was on the bed in the house. Well, that evening, they asked us to come back because they were going to have a wake. Now, you can imagine an 11-year-old. So we went down. Mother felt she should because it was part of the memory. And by this time, the casket was made. And the body was in the casket. And they had food. I don't know who brought the food. And they were all sitting around talking. And all of a sudden, the door opened. And in came, I don't remember. Excuse me, I don't remember how many people. But they all had on masks and spears in their hand. They came in, kind of a chant, and went around the casket three times, chanting.